Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome to another special bonus edition of the Paul Ryder Tapes. We've got a fantastic episode for you this week with some Monday stories that have never been told before. You're about to meet the man who first coined the word Madchester. He's one of the Bailey brothers who co-directed most of the Monday's videos. He was also responsible for introducing the band to Carl Denver back in the day. And he also happens to be a really good friend of mine. He's a Northeast transplant who's now an honorary Mancunian. He's the artist, the visionary video wizard that is the lovely Philip Shotton.
Did we say you co-directed or you directed all of the videos?
I mean, it was Bailey Brothers, who was essentially Keith and myself, Keith Joblin. But by accident, it ended up with the Mondays videos, although we were an entity ourselves making the writing the Mad Fuckers for Wilson and Factory. We ended up with Richard Heslop as well, sort of making the Mondays videos with us. So he was an old mate of mine from London, and he just happened to be up the weekend when Wilson came along and said, oh, I've got this band, Happy Mondays. We want to do a video for this song, 24 Hour Party People. Here it is. We're going to do it on Sunday. Are you around? Kind of thing. And we said, well, we've got our mates up and stuff, but we'll come along. And when we got there, he introduced us to the band, met outside the Hacienda, introduced us to the band on the Sunday morning, and then said, right, I've got to go to London. So just get on with it. He'd got us a camera from like Manchester Film Co-op or somewhere. You know, it was like a really crappy camera, which didn't work. But luckily, Richard had his Super 8 camera with him. So we basically went off and just shot that day on Super 8. So that was where I met the band, that day, basically making the vid.
So just wind back a bit. So your first connection with Tony was, tell me about the Mad Fuckers, what that was all about.
I was in London, basically at film school at Royal College of Art. And Keith had formed a relationship with Tony because they'd done a video for Kalima or something. Anyway, I was coming up all the time to Manchester to see my mates. And I basically, one weekend, I came up with all the film equipment and lights and we made a video for Factory, which was pure trickery for Kalima. And then I went back off to London. And when Wilson saw it, he was like, well, hang on a minute, how much did this cost? And it was like 600 quid, which was basically the cost of processing the film, buying the film, processing it. And he just made like the Jonathan Demme New Order video, which had cost them like, I don't know, 60 grand, 80 grand. It was going to cost 20 grand just to get Jonathan Demme over for the, you know, for the shoot. So you'd done this for 600 quid. So he's obviously thinking, right, okay, well, there are ways of doing this a bit cheaper than New Order do it. So we were just on his radar then. Then they came thick and fast because we did it for other bands. Like he had a Moroccan or Tunisian band, Nacelle Feek was the song. I can't remember who that was. So we just did various videos for him, and then once the Mondays thing started, it just snowballed. And we were writing the Madfuckers, basically, which was a drama script. So we had offices. We were getting like seed money off Factory to write. So we had an office in Sackville Street, and we were just around. And we saw Wilson virtually every day.
What happened to the Madfuckers?
It basically all fell apart when Factory fell apart. I mean, it was in development for a while and we had like loads of interest in it. We met with like Eric Fellner, and we had some producers in London aboard who were called The Producers. We had John McKenzie was on board. We had Gabriel Byrne was going to play the lead in it. It was all like progressing really nicely. And then when Factory fell apart, it fell apart basically, the whole deal. The script's still around. Oliver Wilson's like, he's a bit of a cheerleader for it because he found it when he cleared out his dad's stuff. He's going, oh, I've got to remember this, my dad's talking about it. And I met him at a Kraftwerk concert and he was going, I've shown it to Michael Winterbottom. And I was going, fucking good luck with that. We spent years trying to get that off the ground. Do you know what I mean? But we always rated the script. And of course, there was going to be parts for all the Mondays in it and stuff. It was all like snowballing. It was a bit of an adventure.
And what's the story? What's the story of it?
Basically, it's a relationship between two lads and a girl. They're joyriders. And they have a big crash at the beginning. One of them gets thrown in jail. They come out of jail and they go in search of the girl. And they go on a sort of odyssey. And it's all mixed up with a guy who's got a nightclub. It's where Madchester came out of, because during this, in the script, we always, like, you know, the first line from the gangsters come back in a Learjet and he goes, there's sunny old Madchester down below, you know. It's like Madchester became our joke term for Manchester, really, in the film.
You invented that term, didn't you?
Well, invented is a bit of it was in the script, basically. Me and Keith wrote the script and it was in the script. And Wilson came across it because, you know, Central Station were in the same building in Sackville Street. So when they were doing Rave On, he was like coming, he's going, it was all everybody was T-shirt crazy at the time. I don't know if you remember in Manchester, everybody was T-shirt crazy. So it was all like, what T-shirts can we make up? And there was a still that we had that we loved from 24-Hour Party People video, which was Bez just like staring into space like this with his eyes in the car. And we were saying, right, well, we'll do this as a postcard with Welcome to Madchester. You know, like greetings from Asbury Park or something, you know, welcome to Madchester with Bears, like this will catch, you know, get that on a... So we were talking about that, get that on a T-shirt. And he's going, what do you mean Madchester? We were going, it's in the script, you're not ready. He's going, Madchester, Madchester. We're going, yeah, calm down. He went next door to Central Station, said, right, stop the press. It's going to be called Madchester Rave On. This is like the same within minutes. And nobody else really thought it was a very good idea. I remember Sean was just like, what is that? Madchester, just like, we want Rave On, we want Rave On, you know. So it became Madchester Rave On. But luckily, Matt and Pat did that fantastic logo, didn't they? Madchester logo. And within a week, the T-shirts were done. It was like fucking out there. So no stopping it, really. But that was later on, really. That was whenever that was Hallelujah, wasn't it? That period.
So Tony just randomly said to you on a Sunday, oh, come and meet this band, I want you to do a video for them this afternoon. Like, you had no preparation.
Yeah, it was, no, he came round on like the Thursday night with a single. And I think me and Keith just like, because we were living together in Fallowfield, we just like played it all night going, what the? What is this? Because it was like, I kept on going, it's like the Stones, it's like the Stones. But obviously we were like just dead excited because it sounded good. And then as soon as we met the band on the Sunday morning, it was like they didn't know where they were. Phil Sachs had dragged them down to Hacienda. You're making a video. Like they were all like, what? Who are these guys? We turned up, didn't like have a camera. And like it was like absolute chaos. Decided to do it in a car park behind Dale Street because we had a car. Or we had another mate who'd driven Richard up, had an American car. So I thought, right, we'll just drive around the car park with like this American car and just film whatever we can. We've got like 2 hours. And they were all the lads, like we kind of, you know, I wouldn't say we bonded quite quickly, but we all understood each other because we're all fairly the same age, all from the same type of backgrounds, albeit Newcastle, Manchester. We knew where we're coming from. Kind of looked quite similar. I do remember Paul and Sean having a big fight over a bottle of Boddington's ale. You know those brown plastic bottles, right? And there was about this much left in the bottom. and they're having this fucking huge argument about who's going to finish the bottle. And I do remember somebody coming up with, like, I put in 17p, because it probably only cost 87p, do you know what I mean? I put in 70p, 17p, that's mine. So I was thinking, the Hellraisers, it's great. And then we just went and did it, and it was just dead simple. Drove around a car park, and Richard filmed it. We got a little battery light that ran off the car engine to light it, and improvised. It was all good. And then I thought, this is just going to be the best fun in the world. And it was. And then it was on the chart show, of course, which was really bizarre because, I mean, they weren't really doing much at the time, the Mondays, in terms of everybody knowing who they were, I don't think. But they managed the chart show fantastically, showed a bit of the video, which obviously was a bit crazy, the video and the music, apart from anything else. So the chart show was our lifesaver, because after that, every time they wanted a video made, Wilson would come in and go, right, the chart show are going to show it in 2 weeks' time, so let's get a video made. And the chart show would show it on the independent charts. They'd show like 20 seconds. We always used to think, what 20 seconds are they going to pick? Let's put a really strong bit in the middle, because they usually just get a chunk out the middle.
Can you remember what your first impressions were of them when you very first met them that Sunday?
I thought they were fantastic, because like I was a punk, and that was so that punk sensibility was really important. It was, and punk seemed to sort of fade away. So I was off at film school when videos started coming along. It suddenly became like Duran Duran on a yacht with models. You're thinking, well, hang on a minute, wasn't punk supposed to get rid of all this shit? Do you know what I mean? Like this showing out and not being who you are and wearing costumes like Ultravox of Vienna, you know, you're thinking it's a bit. So, and obviously the band, I think the first thing they're all going is, we don't have to wear makeup, we don't have to mime, we don't have to, and we were going, no, it's just, we're just going to film you. Just do this, jump in the car, drive around a bit. Do you know what I mean? It was dead chaotic anyway. Just be yourselves. And they were. And obviously, I was just thinking, God, if this band ever do anything, wouldn't that be fantastic? It's like punk. It's like they're real people who everybody, we can all identify with, making really good music. So my first impression was, thank you, God.
So if you'd said to them, oh, we need you to put these costumes on, and
it was always their greatest fear, would we have makeup, miming. I think by the end of it, by the time we'd come to do Judge Fudge, which is the one where it's kind of like pretend film where they're breaking into a bank vault with a thermal lance and they've got champagne diamonds, and we put that story in, cut it in with a performance at the Pyramid in Stockport. By that time, they were like a bit more confident, and they were like, oh, it's like being in a film. Certainly, I know Sean and Paul probably wanted to be acting. Do you know what I mean? Really deep down, if they had the courage. But everybody was shy. I mean, it was their first. You didn't want to put any pressure on them, just like other than be yourselves. Because, you know, it's not like now where everybody's on Instagram and they're all dead confident all the time. Back then, people were still quite shy having the camera put in their faces. And like, oh, you're going to be pretend to be a pop star. It's not where they were coming from, really. They wanted to be genuine and all that, which is why I absolutely loved that. It was just perfect.
So did you do the classic thing of having playback and then they were miming along to playback? How did that
happen? No, not really. That was always utterly chaotic. The playback for that must have been... It might have been a Ghetto Blaster battery recorded. It still was by the time, if you watch like Hallelujah and Clap Your Hands, which was dead late on the Clap Your Hands, you can see what we're using, because I'm standing there with a Ghetto Blaster in the video, you know, like, and they're kind of going, off a tape. It wasn't even off like the DAT. That's why, like, everything's out of sync all the time, you know, and shots are thrown in there because nothing was ever in sync. It wasn't like occasionally when we really had our shit together, we'd get the perfect final mix, that, but it was always just, you know, what's that version? Well, it sounds right, let's do that.
Effectively, what you're saying is that the way that you made videos was very similar to the way that they approached their music, but that's what created the magic.
Yeah, absolutely. There was no pressure on us from... Like, Wilson would always just say, do whatever you want to do. Be as creative as you want. I don't care. I'm not going to come and it was always director's cut. It was always like, just give us it in 2 weeks' time. So we'd have a week to prepare it. We'd shoot it at the weekend, edit it in 3 days, get Biker over the chart show. In 2 weeks, it was done and dusted. And you get half the money up front and half the money at the end. And it was simple as that. No contracts, nothing.
How much did he pay you?
First one was probably about, the party people was probably about $2,000. Then it went up to sort of maybe $4,000, then $6,000, then $12,000. And then by the time we come to George Fudge, I remember it was like we'd reached $20,000 and we spunked it all shooting 35 mil. We had like two cameras, we had a huge crane. So we'd make like 500 quid each, me and Keith, off the videos if we were lucky, do you know what I mean? But 600 quid, but then it's 2 weeks' work and it's on the telly. We were like, what? We've made like party people and we were going, like, some people wait forever to make, get their careers going, get a video, work your way up. We were just like, made it, and 2 weeks later we were on the telly. So, you know, it worked. It's all thanks to the band. I'm not, it's really, if because my our philosophy was always, right, if the band's good enough, which they were, and the music's great, just point the camera at them. The zenith of that was the Rope for Luck in Legends, because it really was just like, as long as they turn up and we've got the music on, we just film them on the dance floor, and that's it. It's as simple as that. And it was. It was like 2 takes, 3 takes. Never did more than 2 or 3 takes.
Tell me about the video with the feathers.
That was Hallelujah. So that wasn't a very big budget video. And Keith wasn't around that day, but me and Richard basically went to see Leroy, who had Dry Bar, and said, can we film it upstairs in Dry? It was really good location, Dry Bar. It was just an old furniture warehouse. Rigged the lights, got them in, and just went for it. And we did that. That was probably 2 or 3 takes because we had flares, we had feathers. It just caused chaos. It was just like, cause as much chaos as possible and film it. And when that finished, there was like, that was the one that was like, we just had a ghetto blaster for playback. And I was going, what's on this tape? There's another song on it. And somebody said, that's Clap Your Hands. And we were like, oh, right, well, we've got like a roll of film left, you know, right, why don't we do that? And we've got time, yeah, we've got loads of time. Had like an hour left. So we whacked that in and got that in about a take and a half. But by that time, they'd finished the video they were meant to make and everybody's dead relaxed and everybody's just mucking about. It's proper Rod Stewart and the Faces, that they're all swapping instruments. And like Gaz just gave up drumming after about 5 seconds and started throwing feathers around. It's just, everybody was just totally relaxed. There's some great stuff. Paul's great in all the videos as well, because he's like, he's kind of dancing, like in Rope for Luck, he's dancing with Sean all the time and that stuff. He was just cool in the videos. He knew when to dance and when to just pose.
Did you have to direct them much?
No, you just set up it was a case of setting up an environment and a vibe and everybody being relaxed, playing the music, and filming it in as creative a way as possible and doing it as few times as humanly possible because they just get bored. Like the third take, usually the second take's best. You could use bits out of the third take. And the first take was usually just shit. It was just like, yeah, come on. But we never got beyond a third take on anything really, possibly Judge Fudge because it was quite complex. But.
And you just use one camera?
Pretty much, but I always shot, like with Step On and stuff, I always shot Super 8 as well while I was there. So there would always be stuff to cut to that was a bit kind of pop vid, because I always shot Super 8 while I was at it. Because you could do loads of good stuff in telecine back then. We'd slow everything down to a frame a second, or there was just loads of creativity we had in the edit. So you just knew as long as you captured the moment, didn't really matter if it was in sync or whatever, you'd just rescue it in the edit by being creative in the edit, as long as you had like nice, crunchy material.
Tell me about the one that you did in Spain.
Step One was meant to be the first one where we actually kind of went in, because like Sean was really into like movies and stuff, and he was like, why don't we do a spaghetti western? And we were like, yeah, okay, yeah, you know, kind of sounds interesting. So we went out to Sitges in Spain, me and Keith, and we scouted loads of locations in the mountains. Oh, this is where we're going to film it and stuff. But the problem was that they were on a European tour and they'd completely gone missing. So when we left Manchester, nobody had heard of them. Nobody would get hold of Nathan. Nobody had heard what was happening with the band. I suppose it was probably very early mobile phones, if at all. So they'd literally gone AWOL. There was a gig they hadn't turned up to. Nobody knew where the fuck they were. So we went out on, I think, the Friday, waited all day. Saturday, still nobody had heard of them. Sunday, nobody had heard of them. We had a cameraman over from Granada TV, who was a really good cameraman, David Odd, with his assistant. So we were thinking, this is completely blown. Nobody's heard of them. We're going to have to send them home. You're going to have to go home tomorrow. We'll wait around, see if they turn up. Because they had a gig in Barcelona, I think, on the Monday night or something. So they had to turn up at some point if they were going to make the Barcelona gig. And then literally about 5 o'clock on the Sunday evening, the coach rolled up with no warning whatsoever at the hotel. And they all got off like they didn't know where they were, didn't know where they'd been. It was all like, where's the drugs? Literally kind of like, what the fuck is going on? They had Jack with them on that, Jack Barron. Jack Barron got off and literally walked up to me. I'd never met him before. He's going, have you got any weed? We're down to pollen, we've got nothing, it's dust. Anyway, so we were going, well, apart from that, we've literally got like 30 minutes before it goes dark. We've got to make the video. And we're obviously not going to do the one in the mountains, but the hotel we were all staying at had this huge hotel sign on the roof. And it was beautiful and the sun was going down. So we literally dragged them up to the top floor, dragged them up onto the roof and started filming. It was like, it was that quick. Bez had disappeared to get food. So he came back with like burgers, which everybody was just like chowing down on, everybody's spliffing up. And it wasn't really, it was just them on a roof, literally relaxing after having gone AWOL for about 3 days. And the sun set and we got Sean on the E and became the NME cover. And so it all turned out nicely in the end, but it wasn't a spaghetti western like we originally thought it might be. It was just another chaotic event that lasted again about 3 takes.
What a brilliant story. I've never heard that story before.
It literally had all gone tits up and it all turned out all right.
And then it ended up being a really iconic video. And like,
yeah, because Kevin Cummins was there. So we were filming, or one sort of big idea was like, let's get him on the E and sent David Odd, who was the cameraman who had a really lovely long lens, down onto the seafront, filming back up at the E. And so Sean's up there, and of course Kevin Cummins took a snap of it. And by the time we'd basically got back and got into the edit, that was the front page of the NME, was Sean on an E, which obviously very iconic. And then the video came out and it looked great because he's like, it's kind of all married up because he's climbing on the E. And the lads were all just having a great time. We just had to cut around all the smoking and the chaos.
Did you find out where they'd been when they were AWOL?
No, I never found out. They just got lost. Nathan wasn't the most reliable manager. I don't know what they'd been doing. Nobody will remember what they'd been doing.
A lot can happen in 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Bez, I've just literally just done Bez, and he's like, funny thing is, I can't really remember much about it.
Got some great stuff of him dancing. There's loads of, I've got a whole, like, 10 minutes of him just dancing in a corner by himself, just in case we needed it, but we didn't use it. One of the major problems I've got is when Factory went bust, when they were in what became Paradise Factory, so the new offices, we had an office in the basement, and that's where we stored all our footage. So all our film and all the original outtakes and stuff went missing when Factory went bust because everybody was just piling in there and dragging everything out. It was like suddenly the bailiffs were there. And I remember seeing people you know.
So who do you think got your tape? So you're saying that somebody took your tape?
I don't know. I mean, it could. I just never got in there and got them out. When I went back to factory, they weren't there. So I don't know.
Okay, other videos with, like, I mention any video and you've got a story, haven't you? So let's just go through.
Yeah, you wanted to talk about Carl Denver, though, didn't you, Lazyitis? Basically, what happened was I was, like, a bit of a Carl Denver obsessive for some bizarre reason that I'd, like, rediscovered him. And I had an album by him, which I really loved, because it was just, I don't know, it was just... I don't know if it was nostalgia, but he just had a dead unique style called Denver and some great songs. So one day in the evening news or somewhere, we found out that he was living in Manchester and he was living in Reddish. So we got in touch with him and went for a pint with him in Reddish. And I was like, you're just great. And he's going, what do you guys do? And we told him. So I had a really good chat on with him and got on great, but it was just like kind of meeting your hero kind of thing. It wasn't anything behind it. And then probably the next day we told Wilson, oh, guess what? We met Carl Denver. Do you remember him? When were we? Well, he's going, what do you mean you met him? And he's going, well, yeah, he does the cabaret around Manchester. He's playing. We were going to go and see him in North Manchester. Can't remember. It was like a supper joint. It was like literally, you know, with your ticket, you got like scampi and chips or chicken in a basket or whatever. So Wilson's going, that sounds great. So we've all got to go. It was like factory trip out. So I don't know how it became like the Mondays. I don't know how it became in his head, but he did take the Mondays and us to watch Carl Denver in this supper club. We were all, wow. And the next thing I really knew was, yeah, they were going to do a song with him, and Mike Pickering was going to remix Whim Away, and he was part of the factory team, and they were going to sign him and shit. So it happened quite quickly. And then, of course, they did Lazyitis, which was, I thought was brilliant, because it was where they dragged that song from. And yeah, so, and that was quite fun, because we had them playing football in the high concept for that was, we'd come up with a concept that they could maybe fit in with, which was in prison, in the rain, playing football. It's your only, like, it's going to be a lovely moment. It's your one bit of freedom. And so we had to get rain in Manchester, which isn't as easy as you think, because we obviously had to schedule it. So what we did was, this is again where we blew the budget. We got a rain machine, a guy from down south who was a rainmaker, and he completely built above the five-a-side pitch. He built a rain machine, so we had rain on tap and lit it, and it's like prison guards and all that. The funniest thing about that was because we said, just get all your mates down, we'll have a proper kick around and stuff. And we'd got, the costumes were like original Strange Ways prison uniforms. And I remember going in to like, give them like their costumes, going, right lads, you just got to put these on. They were all horrified. It was like, I'd really overstepped the mark. They were like, got to put these on. The last time I had one of these on, it was all like that. It was all like, oh God. But yeah, they all joined in, and there's some good faces in that video. And Derek's in it, obviously. Paul's dad's in it, John.
Tell me more about Derek.
I love Derek. He was great. We used to see a lot of him because when we turned up to do stuff, he'd like turn up in advance to help with the sound and stuff like that. You know, like everybody probably has a memory of walking into a sound check and Derek's just taking over the stage and he's doing all Sean's stuff. And then Sean would walk in and go, yeah, he just wants to be me, he wants to be a pop star. I probably saw Derek a lot, really, because he was kind of an intermediary always with the band and stuff. He was just lovely. Yeah. I'm so glad he was in that video, really, because he should have been in a few more of the videos, really.
So did you witness a lot of good fights between Paul and Sean then?
Not really. I can't say I did see a lot of good fights between them, because in the videos they always kind of look good together, do you know what I mean? And I was aware of it, but I've got brothers, so I always just thought, of course there's sibling rivalry and dynamics going on. That's how it's supposed to be. I really liked the idea that they were brothers. Thought I was dead cool in a band. So whatever was going on with Sean and Paul, it was always great when I was with them. It wasn't like they hang out together. Because I'd see Paul in town, like on Market Street or whatever, because he's like shopping for clothes, as we all do. So I'd see him out, but he wasn't always with Sean.
Did you go and see them playing live a lot?
Quite a bit. I mean, I filmed G-Mex.
How was that?
Chaotic and crazy, really. I was on stage for quite a bit of it, just next stand next to Sean filming it. So I don't, but a lot of these things, I don't know what happened to the footage of that, because we were filming it because we were going to put God's Cop out, which was the James Anderton track, and it never went out as a single. So I was kind of filming it for that. And I wanted to have, I wanted to put tracks on the stage, and the road crew were just like, you're not, get off our stage. So the most I could do was like walk around the stage and wait for them to throw us off it. And I kind of knew them all, but they were just hardcore. This is our stage. So I just got what I could, basically.
How was Sean with you being on stage with him, having a camera?
Oh, I loved it. He was never, it was never a problem. He could just be anywhere with Sean, stick a camera in his face. It was always fine. He was just used to us just being there in front of him. It was absolutely never a problem.
Yeah. Did you hang out with him outside of making the videos?
Anyway, you would see them at the pub before, then we'd see them in the house, and yeah, we'd always be bumping into them. But didn't, never really hang out, wasn't, you know, we weren't like, you know, going out partying together really. We'd find ourselves in the same places. But it was never like an intense relationship. We just like, we'd meet up to do the videos, and it would be like, you know, as if the last video was yesterday. And obviously there was a lot of trust going on, because we weren't asking them to do anything that was outside of their comfort zone. When they did start to do stuff outside their comfort zone, like I think they remade Step On for an American audience. I seem to remember, because it was that John Congers track and it was for another album or whatever. And we'd made Step On, we loved it, but they actually remade it. See, what the dynamic was, Sean would go, right, New Order is spending like 80 grand on a video, 100 grand on a video, why aren't we spend that much on a video? We go, we can, but half of the money's going to come out of your future royalties. So that's going to cost you like 40 grand. So you want to spend 40 grand of your money on a fucking video when you made one for like 4 grand. So they took that logic, trying to save them a bit of money in the long run, because it was crazy spending that much money on videos. I worked on videos like that. I made New Order videos. It's just, you don't need to spend that money, but... So we sort of explained that they didn't have to spend that money. But to go back to Step On, I think it must have been Island Records, or was it London Records, or whoever they were with, whoever they'd done a deal with, took them to London and put them in a studio and did this sort of mock-up, really weird, structured video where they would have had to do it like 20 times, because I've been on sets like that. And they had like a Chinese couple fighting with TV and stuff like that. I remember hearing stories like Bez walked off after about 10 minutes, but we never asked them to do anything like that. We just said, just turn up, we'll be done and dusted in a few hours. Don't worry about it.
What was the last video that you did?
Last official one was Sunshine Love, but the band weren't really involved with it. So the last one was probably Judge Fudge, I reckon. Okay. Or Loose Fit, maybe.
And how many years had gone by between the first one and that last one that you did?
3.
Would you say that they'd changed as people during that time? Were they different to work with when they'd got some success under their belt?
Not in the slightest. I would say if they had, because with us, the relationship was exactly the same from day one until the end. It was no different at all. They were exactly the same. And that's probably because we didn't hang out together and didn't have like all those different weird personal dynamics. We were just, we worked together. We saw each other when we were out and we got on and trusted each other sort of thing. Do you know what I mean? In a professional capacity. Because there were people go on like how unprofessional they were, but they weren't really with us because we were, you know, we weren't. I certainly wasn't taking drugs while I was making those videos because I thought, why would I do that when we've got to get a video made? Everybody else is off their fucking box. It would be a disaster if I was taking drugs and partying while making the videos, which I know happened with other people, not to mention names. But it wasn't that wasn't what it was like. So if the band were taking drugs, that's fine. If it helps the performance, it doesn't bother me. You know what I mean? So. But no, it was just a professional relationship is what I'm saying, and they were quite professional. Once you get them to turn up, as long as... And they always just turned up. That was like always like, are they going to turn up? Early on, it was hard just getting in touch with people, and we did spend one day when, after we'd made 24-hour party, we thought, oh, we've got to do, like, pickups for this, because we've just... The camera went down, we've just got some Super 8, we've got to fill in the gaps somehow. So we arranged to film, to get them together on another day, and we literally drove around for about 6 hours around North Manchester trying to get the band together, and then it went dark and we never did it. We never even got anywhere. We filmed a little bit with Sean in the rehearsal studios, I think, but never got the band together again. So it was a good time all the time for me making those videos. It was everything I could have dreamed of, because like, I've made other videos and they're never as much fun, really.
And then for you, it led to a career, really, didn't it?
Not really, no, to be honest. Like, we had people ringing us from London going, right, you've made the Mondays videos. We want to know who the producer was, who the makeup artist, who the camera assistant was, who's the operator. Give us the list for the breakdown for these lists we have in London and Soho. We were going, well, we made it. And they're going, what do you mean we made it? Well, it was me and, like, Keith and Richard was there. Well, who did what? Well, we all did a bit of, we all filmed it, we all produced it. Do you know what I mean? It was like, we just didn't play a ball. So then we kind of blew any chance of, not that I'd ever want to go to London and make videos, because that's what Richard was doing, who was making the Mondays videos with us. He was working on, he ended up doing like Paul McCartney and Queen, and he did the Ebenezer Good, the Shaman videos and stuff like that. So he was in that scene, and it wasn't, I was quite happy in Manchester. So unless there was somebody in Manchester doing that, and I did other stuff for Wilson and other bands. I've done a fall video, I did like stuff for Wilson and Raw Tea. So I've always made videos since, but I just went into TV when Factory finished. I went and worked for the BBC for a bit and then worked for you. So I just went, in fact, I turned me back on videos after that. So it didn't really lead to a career in videos. It might have done if I'd had any sense about me or any nous, but it didn't. But I'm quite glad, because then it would have spoiled it.
So tell me about Sunshine and Love. Why were the band not involved with that? Was it just...
Because that was really when Factory were going down, and I filmed Rowetta. Maybe they were involved. We did, filmed it in a studio in Heaton Mersey. But like, the problem started immediately, because when we went to hire the equipment from VFG or whoever it was who we always used for the videos, they were like, nah, you've got to pay cash up front. We're not trusting Factory. They wouldn't... I had to like... call them from the set to get the money off Wilson cash before they'd hand over the cameras. It was all just a bit shit, really. I don't know. And it just, by that time, it was all like downhill. And I think we were cobbling together footage from other footage that had been around. So I don't even think about that as a video. I've never even seen it since. The high point was probably Judge Fudge and, yeah, around that time, I think. Yeah.
The one with the models that you did in a studio where Gavin...
Yeah, that was... to be fair, Keith made that and I made Loose Fit, because by that time, everything was breaking apart and me and Keith weren't really working together and the Madfuckers was falling to bits. So Wilson, in his ultimate generous, you know, the way he is, he said, right, Keith, you can do a video and Phil, you can do a video. And he grabbed two songs and Keith did Kinky Afro and I did Loose Fit. And so that's how that happened, really. There's a great shot of Paul in Loose Fit with the, like, an explosion going off behind him, and he's wearing these like really cool shades.
So how did you feel when you found out that he died?
Utterly and completely shocked, basically. I heard it on the radio. I was utterly shocked. I think the first thing was to try and get in touch with you and find out how you were, really. I was kind of following the progress of the tour and thinking, oh, it's all good.
And there have been so many others, like Terry Hall. A lot of musicians seem to be dropping dead between the ages of 55 and 65. And maybe it's just we're getting to that age where that sort of stuff happens, I don't know.
To be fair, that lifestyle's not conducive to health, is it? Pure rock and roll, Hellraiser.
I know.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
I know.
For me, it was always just a pleasure to get together with them. It's just, it was always just cool.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you so much for agreeing to talk.
Oh, great to talk to you.
Yeah, you too. Really nice to see you. Take care. Yeah, you too. Thanks again so much. All right, take care. That's all we have for you this week. We're playing out with a track that Paul did with his LA collaborator, Matt Cheadle. It's called Real World, and this is Eddie Gronfier's remix, which will be one of the tracks on the compilation album that we're putting together with a range of tracks that Paul's done with different collaborators through the years. It's coming soon. We're going to be back again next week, same time, same place, with another episode. And if you want to see the video version of this episode, it's going to be premiering on our YouTube channel, which is Glistening Stories, next Sunday, which is March the 24th at 8 p.m. UK time. And I will be live in the chat with Chico as usual. Please join our Patrons Club by going to www.patreon.com/The Paul Ryder Tapes. That's patreon.com/The Paul Ryder Tapes. Patrons get first dibs on being in our live streams, and we've got another one coming up very soon, so don't miss out. Have a brilliant week, everybody. Big thanks to all of you for being here. Big thanks, of course, to the fab Phil Shotton for talking to us this week. And thanks, of course, as usual, to the man himself for inspiring all of this. That's to the late, great Paul Anthony Ryder.
Keep on rocking in the real world. Keep on rocking in the real world. Keep on rocking in the real world.